Welcome to the Smiles Matter podcast by Microdental Laboratories. I'm Laura Kelly, and it's my pleasure to host our new series, Winning Strategies for Today's Dental Practice.
That's one of the things that therapy has really helped me develop is like this sort of lattice work of coping skills that are more healthy than what my coping skills were before. And it's made me more empathetic. It's made me a better listener. It's made me a better leader in my office. And quite frankly, like this isn't the reason why anybody should do therapy, but it's a great side effect. So my profitability has gone up. You know, I do more dentistry now than I did before. And I think that's mainly because I'm a better listener and I'm more empathetic with people. And so when you're a better listener and are more empathetic, you're going to get more people to say yes to treatment, you know, because you make them feel good.
Anxiety, depression, burnout. The pandemic at hand has multiplied these feelings across the world, including our own colleagues within the dental profession. What's encouraging is that as a society, we've become more comfortable addressing the stigmas surrounding mental health. What some of these symptoms can look like amongst individuals, and how we can help ourselves and those who need support. To help further this conversation, it's my pleasure to host Dr. Joshua Austin, a leader and a friend in the dental community, for destigmatizing mental health, the struggles that may come with it, and how to find help. Dr. Austin graduated from the University of Texas Health and Science Center, San Antonio Dental School. He's a published author and lectures nationally on restorative dentistry and reputation management. In 2014, Dr. Austin was awarded a fellowship in the American College of Dentists for his outstanding commitment to ethics in patient care. He is a member of the Seattle Study Club and has a monthly column and a weekly e-newsletter in dental economics. Dr. Austin earned his fellowship and mastership in the Academy of General Dentistry and has used his platform to push change into the narratives and stigmas surrounding mental health. Welcome to our podcast, and thank you for your time in joining us today, Dr. Austin.
Thank you.
Yes. You know, one of the most relevant topics that we all know that's became even, you know, more exposed by the pandemic is mental health. And I think it's it really feels, I think, for many of us that this is a time where we've arrived and we're getting, you know, more comfortable addressing this topic, identifying symptoms in some situations, you know, looking, you know, to just get some additional help, you know, and be very open in discussing this, and just very honored to have the opportunity to have this conversation with you, and honored that you're sharing your own personal story as well. It's just thank you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know. I've always felt like if I could help even just one person in an audience or listening, then that makes all of it worth it. So if there's even one person listening today who I could sway into the idea of getting or going to therapy, talking to somebody instead of just sort of suffering in silence, then I think it's well worth it.
I'm always very interested in trying to find out how someone was introduced into the dental profession. We all have a very unique story, and it seems like once people get into dental, it's in our DNA, right? We're in this for a really long time. How did you first get introduced to dentistry?
Well, that actually kind of ties in with my journey of the mental health stuff. So my dad was a dentist, and I think that's a super common thing for many of us. You know, everybody knows somebody or went to school with somebody whose parents, you know, were either one of them was a dentist or both of them were a dentist or in the dental field. And so for me, it was my dad. My dad practiced for 25 years in Amarillo, Texas. And then in 1983, sold his practice in Amarillo and we moved to San Antonio, where he began teaching at the dental school here in San Antonio. And so he's really, you know, wanting to make him proud and make him happy is why I went into dentistry. And the biggest problem with that is that he died when I was 10 years old. So I've been, you know, really chasing a ghost for the last 30 years of my life and trying to get the approval and I'm trying to hear that he's proud of me and he's not here to say that. And so that has really led to some resentment for dentistry, you know, that's led to some career burnout and whatnot, because I've always felt this kind of void, you know, of basically it was, you know, just him telling me that he's proud of me or whatever. And that's kind of been the little emptiness that has led me to realize that, hey, I need to talk to somebody about this before I let things get any worse.
I mean, I can't imagine, you know, as a 10-year-old losing a parent and, you know, how that, you know, can affect you then and then later on in life. Yeah. As well. You know, what were some of the things that you started to realize? I mean, you would seem like, of course, you're going to have this loss, but how did you tie it together?
Well, so it's always been, you know, and I think a lot of us suffer through this. Like, it will be better when X, you know, it will be better when I graduate dental school. Then I'll feel fulfilled. It'll be better when I get into my own practice. Then I'll feel fulfilled. Mm-hmm. It'll be better when that practice starts to grow a little bit, my schedule's full. Then I'll feel fulfilled. And it's just like, you sort of keep chasing that's the next thing is going to be the thing that does it. And then you just realize like one day that that's not going to happen. There is no next thing that will actually bring you that fulfillment. And so I really at some point started to resent dentistry because of it. And I thought I was a really good actor. I thought I was really good at kind of covering it up and internalizing it and kind of, you know, being the only one that knew about my resentment towards dentistry. And one day I came into my office and we use a software that like tries to reactivate people who haven't been in like a year, you know, sends them a message, like trying to get them to schedule their hygiene appointment.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
And they can also opt out if they don't want to hear from us anymore. And then it gives them like an exit interview and asks them some questions and then it'll email us. So like we take them out of the software so that it doesn't keep bugging them. And so I got this email. I come into the office one morning and I opened up the office email and I found this email from a former patient who had opted out of those emails saying that they were seeking care elsewhere. And the reason that they wrote why was because, and I quote, Dr. Austin just seems so angry all the time. And it was just like a pure shock moment. Cause it was like, how does this guy know this? Like, how does he, this, I don't know this person. Like, how does he know that I'm angry all the time? I thought I was pretty good at covering it up. And I realized like, I wasn't that good at covering it up. I just thought in my mind that I was. And so that's really kind of the moment, like seeing that email, that was kind of the moment where I was like, all right, I can't just keep doing this. Like, it's just going to get worse. I really do need to talk to somebody, you know, professionally. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where my journey started.
You know, we all have those wake up calls, right? You know, from time to time, and you can't like, you know how you can't unsee something. You can't like not forget something that really kind of hits your core. So what did you do then? What were your next steps? So
looking back on it, it's kind of funny, but I think there are other people who would go this route because I didn't know who to see. I just thought I needed like a shrink, right? So I made an appointment with a psychiatrist whose office I can see from my office, like from my operatory window. Like I'm looking out my window right now, my office, and I can see her office. And so I made an appointment with her because she's right around the corner. I was like, oh, okay, I can like go at lunchtime and be fine. And so I go to my appointment. It was like an hour and 20 minutes or something like that. And you know, filled out all the paperwork and sat down and she went over all my medical history and all and started asking me some questions. And we talked for like an hour. And at the end of that visit, she said, you don't need me. I was like, what do you mean I don't need you? Like, you're a shrink, right? Like, I lay back here on the couch and you show me ink blot tests or something. It's just what I've seen in the movies, you know, or like The Sopranos or whatever, right? Like, this is what I need. And she's like, so she kind of laughed and she said, you know, I'm a physician. I was like, well, yeah. And she said, so I deal like with managing patients' medications. I deal with working with other physicians as part of an integrative medical team to try to treat, you know, multidisciplinary patients. Like I handle all that kind of stuff. And she said something then that sort of I'll never forget. She said, if I needed a cleaning, would I see you in your office? And I was like, well, I mean, yeah, if you wanted the world's worst cleaning, like, yeah, sure. I can like buzz around your lower front teeth with an ultrasonic for 7 minutes and then polish you and then say goodbye. But if you wanted a real cleaning, like you'd see my hygienist. And she's like, exactly. She's like, I'm you in this office. Like I'm, you know, the only person at this degree level and at this, you know, work level in my office. And there, I work with other auxiliaries for things like this. She's like, you need a therapist, which is basically a dental hygienist for your mind. And I was like, wow, okay, well, that really like puts that in perspective. That makes a ton of sense now.
Yeah.
And so that's when I started seeing a therapist, at least every other week was kind of at that point. And so she, what was interesting, she referred me to the therapist in her office, which was actually not a really good fit for me. Like I just didn't mesh. I didn't click with her therapist very well. So I started seeing a different therapist, but since then I've seen, you know, a degreed therapist, either in person or virtually, at least every other week. And that's been the last, probably 4 years, somewhere in there.
Okay. Yeah. And tell me about because I think some people think, oh, okay, I need, you know, we realize, right, we do a lot of work on our cars and we always updating everything, but our minds and our bodies need updating as well. And taking care of. How did you realize that, you needed to feel that connection with somebody and that it wasn't, you just didn't automatically dismiss it and say, okay, this isn't
yeah.
me. Or that it was okay to really realize that you really had to get that connection. How did you go about that?
So a few things kind of all happen in confluence, which I think is how life change happens is because like random things happen around the same time. And this was kind of one of those things. So I had gotten that email from Chris and then I made an appointment with this psychiatrist and then she told me I needed a therapist. And then somebody that I went to dental school with, that was like a few years before me in dental school, but I knew them, died via suicide around that same time. And so I just knew at that point, like I needed to commit to something, you know, and I really needed to talk to someone about it. And so that kind of all happened together. And then I saw the psychiatrist therapist and we didn't really click. And so I knew like, okay, this is going to be a little bit of a journey for me to find the right person. But when I do, it will be worth it. And so that's when I started the process of finding the right person. And that's a little bit more challenging now in COVID times. I will confess, there are good and bad things about COVID with this because most therapists work virtual now. And that's great because it makes it so easy. Like I don't have to leave the office. I can do it from, you know, from my car. I can do it from my house. I can do it from my office. It makes it much easier to fit in a schedule. The problem is that all you have to do is find somebody who's licensed in your state. So that makes your like number of therapists that you're searching between and that are available to you is like that now it just like 10x, right? Where you were kind of searching for somebody within maybe 5 miles of your house or office. Now you're searching people all over your state, right? And so it makes it much harder to kind of narrow your search down. And so that is the hard part about it. That being said, I do think in a virtual world, I think it is better for most of us because you can find the right person for you, but it probably will take some trial and error. And like just like most people don't marry the first person they date, most people won't click with the very first therapist they meet with or virtually meet with. And also, if we're going to carry this metaphor on to like dating and whatnot, you know, you may find a therapist that works for you for a while. But then like at some point, it's okay to move on to another therapist who maybe focuses on other things. And so, you know, in a marriage, that's maybe a little bit frowned upon for most people's marriage. But in the therapy world, that's kind of one of those things that's totally okay. So I do think in order for you to have really good, healthy therapy, you have to have a connection with the person that you're doing therapy with. Otherwise, you just will not be as open and honest with them. And then at that point, why are you even doing it? You know, so that's kind of what I felt with the very first therapist I met with at the psychiatrist's office. Like we just didn't have a connection and she didn't fully understand where I was coming from. And there just wasn't, you know, it's kind of like when you go on a date and you can just tell within the first 30 minutes or so, like, all right, we're not super compatible. That's sort of how she was. And so then it was just the challenge of finding the right person for me. And that's a whole challenge in and of itself.
But I think that's a really good point that you bring up. And I think, you know, I mean, obviously this is a different topic than dating, but, you know, just because you don't feel a connection on the first date with somebody doesn't mean you should never date again, you know, that this is just part of the process. And then that's okay. You know, it's actually really okay and a part of it. So thanks for kind of going a little bit deeper into that. I think it's important. You mentioned something a little bit earlier about suicide and dentistry, and I'm curious, is there any data about depression and anxiety in the dental profession that your colleagues even can share?
Yeah, there's actually a good amount of data. So when we look at just like anxiety, panic attacks, depression, we know that dentists have about double the rate of the general population at those three things, depression, anxiety, and panic attacks. And that's all self-reported numbers. So that's a pretty high-level study actually done by the ADA. That was just a survey. And, you know, have you ever been treated for this? Are you currently being treated for this? That kind of stuff. And so we know on questions about stuff like this, if it's self-reported, we know that those numbers are going to be anywhere between 10 and 20% low. So So we know it's somewhere more than double the rate of the general population for dentists. As far as suicide goes, that's something we've all heard before, right? You know, someone at a dinner party, someone at a happy hour, or, you know, meeting a new group of friends or whatever, and you say you're a dentist, and inevitably someone brings up like this, the quote unquote, the suicide thing, right? And they'll usually whisper it and kind of make it hushed tones and whatnot. And all of us kind of say the same thing. Like, oh, that's just an old wives' tale, or oh, it's not dentists anymore, it's air traffic controllers, or whatever. And we all kind of dismiss it and poo-poo it. And so I did some digging, and the CDC, which, you know, I know the depending on where you sit on the political spectrum depends on how much you value the CDC these days. But before all this happened, and before the CDC became a political action committee, the CDC was pretty well regarded in terms of epidemiology, and their data shows that dentists are twice as likely to die by suicide than the general population. And then I found one study that was published in the Journal of Deviant Behavior, which is just sounds like a great read. You know, it just sounds like one of those journals you want to read every month, because they're like, are they going to have like whips and chains for 2021? Like what other stuff is in the Journal of Deviant Behavior that sounds really interesting? That showed that dentists were more likely to commit suicide by 564% versus the general population. So just crazy numbers, right? So it does appear that there is some legitimacy to that data. Where it stands in there, I don't know, you know, 564% or 200%. There's a lot of wiggle room between there, but it's probably somewhere in between there. And even if you take it at the low end, it means that basically the dentists are twice as likely to die by suicide than the general population. And so, you know, pretty much all of us know somebody, you know some dentist that either has attempted to or has died by suicide. And that's just, you know, every single one of those is heartbreaking, right? And so I would love for those numbers to be less. And it just happened to somebody that I knew pretty well, a dentist named Jonathan Schenken, a pediatric dentist in Maine, who I knew pretty well and had no idea that he was, you know, sort of at that point. And, you know, it's every single one of them is heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, I think this is where, I mean, I know when we spoke and, you know, about this topic, that the awareness and getting it out there, I think is really important. And so I'm glad that we're talking about this. And, you know, I'm really curious because you're 3 years in now or so in really taking a real deep look at this for your own personal benefit. And, you know, what have you discovered going through therapy, and how is that making you feel, and what's changed for you?
Yeah. So that's a great question. And of course, I think I think therapy is one of those things. It's a little bit like a diet or a little bit like exercise, in that you get out of it what you put in to a certain extent. I could certainly, you know, pay my therapist and not open up to her and not, you know, be honest and authentic and raw with her and not get nearly the same, you know, the same benefit, the same way that you can sort of half-ass a diet or whatever. But I've tried to go into it with a pretty open mind. She has, my therapist is also licensed in California. So she's licensed in Texas and California. She keeps California time on her books, which is great for me, because then it's 3:30 her time and it's 5:30 my time. So we do everything after hours, which is great. But sometimes it is hard at the end of a work day, you know, to like then spend an hour with her, you know, with whatever like weird, what seems like woo-wee-woo exercise. Like, oh, this is just, she's based out of Berkeley. So it's just like, oh, this like weird, you know, hippie BS. But as I've opened up and like tried to be more like, I guess just willing to let her lead me into things that she thinks would help me, you know, just trusting her basically. I found a bunch of benefits. And so the first thing is she does a lot of trauma or a lot of therapy that's called EMDR, which stands for eye movement. And I'm spacing on what EMDR stands for. Let me look it up. And it's basically a specific eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. I always get those two mixed up. Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, and it's specifically for trauma. And so we've really kind of processed a lot of those old traumatic memories about when my dad passed away. So we've worked a lot on that. We've worked a lot on like coping mechanisms. And that's one thing that I think dentists are pretty lousy with is coping mechanisms. So basically the coping mechanism is like, all right, you have a bad day, like you have a rough patient, whatever it may be. The way that we like deal with it, the way that we soothe ourselves is typically bad for dentists. It's drugs or alcohol, food, sex, like things that aren't good for us, right? And so developing healthy coping skills are a really great way to you know, a really great benefit of therapy. So like, you know, you have a bad day, instead of taking a handful of Lortab and huffing nitrous, which is stuff that like happens way more often than you think actually happens, you know, exercising for 30 minutes, far better coping mechanism, right? But that's one of the things that therapy has really helped me develop, is like this sort of lattice work of coping skills that are more healthy than what my coping skills were before. And it's made me more empathetic. It's made me a better listener. It's made me a better leader in my office. And quite frankly, like, this isn't the reason why anybody should do therapy, but it's a great side effect. So my profitability has gone up. You know, I do more dentistry now than I did before. And I think that's mainly because I'm a better listener and I'm more empathetic with people. And so when you're a better listener and are more empathetic, you're going to get more people to say yes to treatment, you know, because you make them feel good. When you listen to them and value what they say and they feel like they're being heard, like that just helps us with our patient care and our patient communication. It helps me with my team. My team has noticed a big difference. And so I think those are all the things that have been benefits of therapy for me. So some of it's personal, you know, and helping my relationships at home, and then some of it's professional as well. You know, that stuff carries into my office too.
Oh, absolutely. That I hear you talking like just a stronger connection, you know, more clear connection with people too. And I love the coping, learning different coping mechanisms. We can really learn a lot from that, you know, healthy outlets, definitely. And you know, in your research, and I know that this is an area you're really focusing deep in. I love that you're talking about this, because it's not something that we hear a lot about. We hear a lot about, you know, clinical preparations and implant and digital dentistry, and this is really interesting. And I'm wondering in your research on this, any types of, you know, specific therapy that you think are better suited maybe for dentists and the struggles that they have in general, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all depends on a lot of different factors. And honestly, most therapists do a combination of several different kinds of therapy, maybe in one session or maybe at different times. Like I said, my therapist focuses on EMDR, but she also does a fair amount of cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a pretty traditional kind of therapy. Cognitive behavioral therapy is sort of along the lines of like, our thoughts, our actions, and our emotions are all tied together in a triad. And so if you change one of them, you can change the others. So if you change your thoughts, then you can change your behavior and your emotions, right? And so I think there's some of that makes a lot of sense. I think there's other things that CBT doesn't work for. But pretty much every therapist is going to have some CBT, some parts of CBT in their therapy. I think at the end of the day, there are very few therapists who are strictly reliant on just one kind of therapy. So you're going to get kind of a potpourri of different types of therapy, no matter where you go. I think if you've had previous trauma in your life, and I don't mean like a car accident, I don't mean like physical trauma, right? Like from a car accident. I mean like emotional and mental trauma. So that could be, you know, a parent or a loved one dying. It could be a divorce. It could be in any of number of those things, right? A bankruptcy. I said a car accident. Like you can have, you know, obviously physical trauma from a car accident, and then you can have emotional trauma from a car accident. If we don't process that trauma, we know from high level medical studies that there will be physical manifestations of that unprocessed trauma. And so there's a great book by a guy named Bessel van der Kolk, I believe is his name. I always am weird about how to pronounce that name. It's Bessel, B-E-S-S-E-L-L, and then van der Kolk, K-O-L-K. He is a MD out of Tufts University in Boston, and he wrote a book called The Body Keeps the Score. And so basically the hypothesis of the book is that unprocessed trauma leads to medical illness in a lifetime. So in someone's lifetime, if you have medical, if you have unprocessed trauma, that it will lead to some sort of medical disease. And that would be like autoimmune disorders, lupus, you know, things like that. Fibromyalgia, those sorts of things. And he basically has done a bunch of big high level studies, like systematic reviews, meta-analysis, things like that, that basically does, that follows this, and this all holds true. And so the most famous study that he did was called the Kaiser ACEs study, which stands for adult childhood events. And so in the Kaiser system, which is sort of a California healthcare system, that is big and far reaching and has many patients in it. He took kids, he did a search and found kids that had had some sort of emotional trauma in their life. So child abuse, parental abandonment, adoption, any of these kind of things that happened to a kid. And he followed those kids for a long time, like 20 plus years. And what he found is that as those kids got older, as those kids got into adulthood, that they had far more medical comorbidities than kids that did not have those, early childhood adverse events. And so, you know, that's really where a lot of this is based out of, is that unprocessed trauma is going to make its way out of your body at some point. And I have a colleague who's really working through some stuff right now, or has been over the last 6 months to a year. He's a dentist. Pretty well-known dentist. I don't want to say his name, but most people listening to this would know him if they would know his name if I said it. Had unexplained diarrhea for 6 weeks. And at first thought it was COVID, because I guess like 10% of people with COVID have nothing but GI symptoms. So went to get like a rapid COVID test and it was negative. And they got a PCR test and it was negative. And so then the MD was just like, oh, it's got to be a gastrointestinal parasite, right? And it's like, put them on Flagyl, and then did like a pretty complex microbiological stool sample, and found nothing wrong, absolutely nothing. And so the only thing they could really bring it down to is like, he was going through some pretty intense therapy for some previous childhood trauma. And that was his body's way of getting that trauma out, right? So if you don't deal with the trauma, your body will deal with it somehow. And it's generally not good the way that happens. And so that's sort of the point. So if you have some of those events that you could call trauma that would qualify as trauma, do whatever you can to deal with those. EMDR is great. California's way more open now. My particular friend that I'm talking about is in California. They've just legalized therapy involving what's basically ecstasy, you know, taking small doses of that and then doing some therapy, taking small doses of psilocybin, which is basically like in psychedelic mushrooms, right? And doing therapy along with those microdoses. They've had some huge breakthroughs on that. So I don't really think there's one kind of therapy that's right. I think it's kind of like brushing techniques, right? Like we all know modified bass. But there's a bunch of other brushing techniques too. And quite honestly, like as long as somebody's doing them, or is doing one of them or a combination of them, or all of them mixed together, whatever it may be, like they're going to remove plaque and things are going to be better for them. That's kind of how I feel about therapy. Like, I don't think it matters what kind you do per se. I just think it matters that you do it. And so find a therapist that you trust. They will find kind of the right cocktail of therapy for you and get this trauma processed before it, you know, turns into 6 weeks of uncontrolled diarrhea, because that's a pretty, pardon the pun, crappy way to deal with it.
Yeah, hope to get it before that happens, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. What, you know, I know that people listening, they might be thinking, okay, maybe I do need to talk to somebody. You know, how should they start?
Like I said, it's easier and harder now than ever, just because of the virtual thing. So really all you need is a therapist that's licensed in your state. Most therapies happening virtual now. We're doing this interview like as I keep wanting to call this variant of COVID Omicroma, which is a composite made by Tokiyama USA. I'm sure they would not love me associating this with that. As the Omicron variant is like, you know, reflexing itself, and things are seem to be shutting back down again across the country. So I would guess that still most people are virtual. If you're in the middle of the country, if you're in South Dakota or whatever, you may be able to find some in-person therapy, but for all intents and purposes, like virtual is fine. There's two different places you could go to find a good directory of therapists that you can start kind of weeding through. One is the American Association of Marriage and Family Therapists Find a Provider tool that's on their website. So that's AAMFT, American Association of Marriage and Family Therapists.org. And they have a Find a Provider, Find a Therapist page. And you just search by your state, and then you can, they have some sort of pull down windows for you to specify if you're looking for anything in particular. So when I went searching for Brittany, I was looking for somebody who was really good at previous trauma. And so that's how I found her. And it gives you kind of a page that has sort of a rundown of their philosophy, you know, two or three or four paragraphs about how they feel about what, you know, therapy and sort of what are the things that they are into and do with their clients. And, you know, you can read through a few of those and get kind of a pretty good idea of what you're looking for once you start reading those. So that's a really good place, the AAMFT.org. And another good place is Psychology Today's website, just psychologytoday.com. They also have a Find a Provider tool that is pretty intuitive as far as searching goes. You can search down to your zip code if you want to, but you really just need to search by your state. And then also same kind of thing, like there are sort of 8 or 9 different global things that you could search for, you know, that people treat. And trauma and PTSD is one that you can find therapists that specialize in. There are others as well. So it just kind of depends on what you're looking for, but their Find a Provider tool is pretty good as well. So I would start at one of those. I'm trying to look and see like what the different things are. ADHD, addiction, anger management, anxiety, bipolar, borderline personality disorder, children, depression, eating disorders, family conflict, grief, OCD, relationship issues, self-esteem, sex therapy, sexual abuse, stress, transgender issues, and then trauma and PTSD. So like those are all the different sort of subheadings that you can search within. So you can find somebody in and amongst that cohort that would be a good fit for you. And like I said, you just have to kind of start therapist dating. My therapist probably would not like me using that term therapist dating, but that's kind of what it is. You know, you got to find the right person for you, and it might be the very first person you meet, you know, and you may have a great relationship with them, or it might take you 3 or 4, you know, and I think that's fine. Most of them will do like a 10 minute sort of onboarding call. Mm-hmm. And the onboarding call, tip from just my anecdotal experience, the onboarding call, you'll pretty much know from the onboarding call if you are a good fit for that person or if that person is a good fit for you. That's typically speaking, when I've had a good feeling, it came from that. When I had a bad feeling, it came from that. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would recommend. You don't even probably have to do a full therapy session with all of them, or with them as you go through, just kind of, you know, one at a time, you know, onboarding calls until you find one that's right for you.
That's a really good, advice and pointing people in the right direction. And would it be safe to say that once you find that connection throughout the sessions, it's not always going to feel wonderful when you're, you know, figuring this all out, right? As long as you have the right fit for the therapist, it seems like it'd be very natural that, at different points in the therapy session, things are getting better. Sometimes it becomes more aware. You can feel it, right?
There are sessions that feel like I just ran 10 miles when I got done. Like I'm physically tired and I didn't do anything but sit on a chair and talk to her there are other times that you know, I don't feel like that at all. So yeah, there are some sessions that are harder than other. It depends on what you're kind of tackling. There are some sessions that you feel amazing afterwards. I remember one in particular. We had this breakthrough on one particular thing about my dad, and it was something that like I had never thought of before. And she just sort of kind of blurted it out like as a side thought, and I was like, wait, go back a second. She said it again. And that like provided this like resolution, like clouds parted, and like it's a hard thing to describe. And mm-hmm. When you have a breakthrough like that, that's like a hole in one in golf. You know, it's like that one thing, like that one moment makes like all like duffing around the course for, you know, the 4 years before that makes it all worth it. we don't have those revelations every week. There's just no way, it's not possible to do that. But when those revelations come along, they're just like, it's like, it's a feeling that's indescribable. Sometimes like you're done. Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, it's just one of those things that it's also a little bit like working out, right? Like sometimes you work out and you're done and you're just like, oh man, I have nothing left to give. You know, I'm like, I'm exhausted. And then other times you work out and you're like, oh, all right. You know, I could do another 30 or 40 minutes, you know? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. Thank you so much really for sharing this really, really important topic. I think it's with specific to dental and really very personal experience for you. I think that says a lot about who you are as a person and trying to really share this and help people. Everybody here, we all love the profession that we're in, and I just can't thank you enough for spending some time here today. Is there anything that you'd like to mention before we close it up?
Yeah, I mean, I just think knowing that, hey, dentistry is really hard, right? And like people have high expectations of us. We have high expectations of ourselves. We, you know, deal with a lot. We have a lot on our plates every day, from, you know, dealing with patient stuff to dealing with business stuff to dealing with our team and all of that. We feel responsible for all that, and we have overhead we got to make and all of that. So it makes sense to have somebody on your team to help you with that, right? And we talk about our team as far as like our accountant and our attorney and our laboratory, right? Like all really important stuff to have on our team. And I think this is like just as important as that, as those people are on our team, is a therapist to keep you right. Because if you're not in the right space that you need to be in mentally, it's really hard to be there for your team and for your patients, and then to have some left when you get home for your family, which is even, you know, which is the most important, you know, people that you need to be in the right space for. So that's what I think this is really, really good for. Like I said, it's really thinking about it. It's like dental hygiene for your mind, right? And so like, if a patient were to ask you like, well, you know, when am I done with hygiene, right? When am I done with prophies? Like, well, I guess when your teeth fall out, right? Like that's when you don't have teeth anymore. That's when you're done with prophies. And I don't want to like make it feel like, well, if you're just going to go to therapy forever and ever and ever until you die. I don't necessarily think it's the exact same thing, but I do think like, you know, kind of going to therapy for a little bit and then maybe taking a little bit of time off and then finding a new therapist. Like, I think that's all very normal, very regular things. But like the idea of practicing hygiene for the mind, I think is a really great way to look at it, because, you know, we do regular maintenance things for our cars and for our computers and for our teeth and for, you know, all these other things, but we're not as great about it for ourselves and for our mental wellness. And that's really where we need to get better.
Well, I can't, like, once again, getting on that track, I'm so glad that you've brought this to the forefront, and thank you for your time today. I can't wait until next time and doing more with you and speaking again soon. I really enjoyed today, and I know our listeners will too. So thank you, Dr. Austin. Appreciate your time.
Sounds great. It was fun. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was really fun. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Smiles Matter podcast, created by Microdental and Modern Dental Laboratories. For more information, you can go to our website, www.microdental.com/Smiles Matter Podcast, or find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or anywhere else podcasts are available. Thank you for listening, because we believe that smiles matter.